Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hi, and welcome to A Taste of the Past. I'm your host, Linda Palacio, on this journey through culinary history. And I wonder how many of you remember the movie Baby Boom. Maybe it was a Baby Boom or Baby Boomers. Anyway, the whole premise of the movie was how we get sort of sucked into these fantasies of everything is better someplace else. And sometimes it really is. But this was, I think, made in Vermont, baby food made in Vermont. So people didn't care about the baby food so much. They were just sold on the phrase made in Vermont. Well, there is now, and not recent, it's been for quite some time, that, of course, the brand Made in Italy. Oh, boy, everybody dreams of having a wonderful trip and you know, hearing the Italian music and listening to eating a wonderful bowl of pasta. And if it's made in Italy, it all must be better. And in fact, as I said, it is, if it really is made in Italy. And there's one woman who has pretty much made it her task and I guess her mission in life to protect this made in Italy. Her name is Beatrice Ughi, and she is the president and founder of Gustiamo. It's an online food ordering site, and they have a big warehouse in Bronx in New York, and they sell wholesale to restaurants. They sell individually. You can just go online to Gustiamo, and you can search all their products. And she vets every single product that is in that online store and in her warehouse to make sure that it is indeed Italian products and made in Italy. Beatrice, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Linda. You could not have said it, but it's an honor to talk to you. So, yes, I started the company 20 years ago, and we import directly from the producer and small farmers and small producers from all over Italy, our selected food products.
Well, I want to ask you this. Several years ago, I was invited to a program and a meeting with the Foreign Trade Commission or International Trade Commission. And indeed, it was, I think at that time, country that was hosting it was Malaysia, and they were concerned about the people taking, you know, calling brands Malaysian product or made in Malaysia, and in fact, they weren't. So the discussion was all about protecting a country's product. But tell me, what concerned you so much that made you start this program?
This process, yes. Oh, the company is clearly to the goal of the company is to promote good Italian farmers and food producers and promote them in the United States and sell their products here. The goal is to protect the real Italian food, because we suffer from much competition of real Italian food here in the United States. And as you said, made in Italy sounds always better than made somewhere else. And Italy is synonymous of a good way of life, elegance, culture, quality of everything you do. I started this company just importing Italian foods and selling them. And then over time, I realized that I was importing something that was almost unique, and that my competition in the food world was constituted by products that were much, much less expensive mm-hmm. than the ones I was able to import. And since I was importing what I thought was the real, I mean, not even necessarily the best of the best, really good family, good processes, good people, good products, of course. And then I realized that the same named tomato, the same named extra virgin olive oil, or the same named pasta were imported here. Or where perhaps not even imported in this market in the United States with the same names, with the same labels. And I started to think, I mean, it was surprised, like stupor, like, how is it possible? And therefore, it became like a mission of myself and my company, my team. We are all here together with the same goals, not only to make our producers, give them a good price for their products, but also to make sure that to defend their honor, to defend the fact that in our opinion they do produce the best extra virgin, the real, not the best. I mean, there are many beautiful extra virgin olive oils or tomatoes or pasta. We just want to make sure that it is clear that the quality of what we represent in this country is real. Is well represented again in the United States, and
right. Well, in fact, I think most people who are interested in food have read about the olive oil wars and the problem with fraud or adulteration of the olive oil. The olive oils that claim they come from Italy and they're all Italian olive oils, but they're not.
Yes. Yes, and.
I mean, this is true with so yes. many things. They can slap a name yes. on it if something of the product says, is from Italy, and they just say made in Italy, or maybe it's packaged in Italy, but it's the product isn't even from Italy. But the government doesn't really have much control on this yet, do they?
No, the government is trying to control the situation, but it's very, very hard. From what I've seen, you can label anything on a bottle of olive oil. You can put any name, or on a tomato or on a bag of pasta, and they will pass as long as the label includes a cute map of Italy or the picture of an old woman picking the olives. Then it becomes already an Italian name, an Italian sounding name. It becomes more attractive on the shelves of the supermarkets.
Right. I know that Parmigiano Reggiano had a real problem with this, and this was during the time that I went to this meeting many years ago, but they finally managed to to trademark their name or
absolutely, yeah, you're right. Absolutely right. The consortium of the Parmigiano DOP consortium is composed of members who are smart, united, who are fighting for the same goal of protecting the origin of their product and the image, right, of the Parmigiano in this country. And therefore, I mean, recently I've been studying the world of extra virgin olive oil, or what is perceived as extra virgin olive oil. And I noticed that one of the problems that we have for this sector is that the producers are not united. The producers of extra virgin, those who have the farms, the groves, the olive oil, the olives, olive trees. There are many thousands of small producers. They are not united. There are several organizations that represent olive oil producers, mm-hmm, or olive oil bottlers, what we say packers, industrial companies. They are not united, or they do not. The biggest ones are the commercial ones, or clearly the bigger. But in terms of the Italian institutions that you were mentioning before, the one thing that I believe started the procedure of perceiving the olive oil as Italian is, unfortunately, was started by the Italian institutions, because you must know that it is legal to call a product of Italy, a bottle of olive oil whose oil inside comes from other countries. So it is sufficient for a company to bottle an olive oil that is made anywhere in the world, to bottle in, mm-hmm, Italy, you know, like perhaps with a bottle that is made in China, who knows. So, and call that bottle, that product, a product of Italy, and have the little flag of Italian. So that's thing that, I mean, to me, that the more I think about, the more I study the issue, the more I think that this was the beginning of a bad process.
Yeah, I mean, because people who are shopping in other countries, they don't understand that. They just see made in Italy and they think they're buying olives that were grown on the property where it was bottled. And, you know, I think that when we talk about a taste of the past, and this is a culinary history show, they're not thinking that these are a people of a region that for generations have been, yes, making these foods. I mean, they're artisan producers.
Yes.
And basically when you buy the fake product, you're taking food out of them, you know, money, right, out of their pocket and food out of their mouths.
Right. Exactly. So when you think about it, and you think that you are shopping in the supermarket and you see a bottle, product of Italy with a very clear wording product. And then when you learn a little more, and you learn that it's not a product of Italy, it's just been bottled in Italy, but the product inside can come from anywhere else. Mm. Then you, mm-hmm, you, as you learn a little more, you get, oh my goodness, where are we going? Why? Well, we know why, but it's damaging, and it's making the issue more and more confusing for the consumer, because if this is legal to, you know, so what else? And the rest is kind of left in the far west of no laws, because there is no protection of Italian products here in the United States. There is no recognition of the, you know, origin of denomination of origin, the DOPs. There is nothing. So you can write anything you want on the labels. And just if you look at the numbers, I mean, it just makes, it is an issue to be studied and to be, you know, we have to start thinking about it. And because if you think about the numbers, the production of olive oil, extra virgin olive oil, if you want three numbers, in Italy, in the average, it varies, of course. You know, it's an agricultural product. Therefore, you have good season, bad seasons, insects, droughts, freeze. But in the average, and it's the average is diminishing, but let's say 200,000 tons, you know. And then the importation of extra virgin olive oil in Italy, 600,000. Can you imagine? So we make 200,000 in Italy. We make 200,000 extra virgin liters, tons of tons. 600,000 are imported, and 500,000 are consumed by the Italians. They already twice as many we produce. You know, 500,000 are more than twice as we produce. And the rest is exported. We export 300,000 tons.
Tons.
I mean, yeah. Tons, of which 100,000 comes to the United States. I mean, where do you think these 100,000 were made if we only make 200,000 in Italy?
Right.
Tons?
You can count the number of farms.
Exactly. I mean, exactly. I mean, it is my goal to start understanding how it is possible that olive oil in this country, in the United States, olive oil that is labeled as product of Italy or Italian extra virgin, how is it possible that it's sold at such a low price?
Yeah. Well, and there are designations. I mean, what I'd like to is maybe talk about another product, and that would be balsamic vinegar, for instance. I mean, I think we're all aware that the stuff you buy on the general, you know, on supermarket shelves is not balsamic vinegar, right?
Yeah. It's not. But also here, I'm kind of worried of where the Italian institutions are driving our agricultural products. Because also here, we have the DOP, balsamic vinegar, tradizionale.
Now explain to us what the designation DOP is.
DOP means that it's a product that was made out of certain, there was a product that's made in accordance to a certain protocol. And this protocol for balsamic vinegar includes certain kinds of local grapes, aging, way of aging in certain barrels of wooden barrels. So there is a protocol that says if you want to call your product balsamic vinegar tradizionale, you have to follow these rules and follow a very serious examination at the moment when the balsamic vinegar tradizionale is ready to go to be sold and consumed with those certifications. This is the denomination of origin certification, DOP.
Right.
A few years ago, the Italian institutions allowed the IGP. IGP.
IGP, right.
Right, which is another appellation, another status that is given to a product. And it is Indicazione Geografica Protetta. And it's called balsamic vinegar of Modena. Now, the IGP, the only requirements that an IGP, like with this noble title, IGP, like, you know, it's you are something serious, you know, you somebody told you that your product is IGP. IGP, the only requirements for an IGP is that this liquid, which can contain caramels, colorant, this liquid stays for 2 months, at least 2 months in near Modena or nearby Modena. 2 months. Huh. So, and in fact, so the confusion is, it's incredible. So now you use a balsamic vinegar. I mean, even between the you know, legalized balsamic vinegars, you know, the DOP and the IGP, the confusion is enormous. The IGP clearly can be sold at very little price,
right,
low prices. And the difference in quantity is that the IGP, balsamic vinegar of Modena, is produced in 100 million liters per year. 100 million liters. I think most of them come to the United States, but it's a ton. It's a lot. While the real balsamic vinegar tradizionale, DOP, is produced in 10,000 liters. So we are talking amazing. 10,000.
And if anyone has tasted the real deal,
yes,
they know that, I mean, yes, it's not something you would use as liberally as you do. First
yes,
of all,
exactly,
the other thing is that it is very expensive, but it is an artisanal product. And, you know, it's a fine gourmet treat. And no, not everybody can afford it. And you use it very sparingly.
Right.
But it's very, very special. And so they've taken some of the special, the specialness
right,
away from it. You know, it's.
And, you know, and it's an expression of that territory.
Right.
Of the history, the history of the region, history of the product and recipes and it's a whole different game.
Yeah, and there are a few other products that I want to talk about, as well as some of the reasons for your carrying on this business. But we have to take a short break, so stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Hey, like what you hear? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. With fresh programming every week, we've got something for everyone. Trying to start your own food business? Concerned about where your food comes from? Looking for the best wine or beer to bring to a party? Find our shows on iTunes or Stitcher, or head to heritageradionetwork.org to listen live and subscribe to our newsletter.
We're back, and I'm here speaking with Beatrice Ughi. She is the president and founder of Gustiamo Online Italian Foods. And they are the real deal made in Italy foods. So if you have any question about what you're buying, you know Gustiamo has the real thing. When we were talking about balsamic vinegar, we talked about olive oil, but there are so many different products that one wouldn't even think to sample and try that are special. We know there are special products from all different countries that when you go and travel there, you taste them and you taste the difference. And you had mentioned tomatoes and the San Marzano tomatoes, but there's only one farm that's really San Marzano tomatoes. So how can they package? But people are calling their tomatoes San Marzano. They're excellent tomatoes. They're grown in Italy. They're Italian tomatoes. But they just can't use the name San Marzano because that's only one specific place. Can you describe this place and what makes these tomatoes so special?
Yes. The San Marzano tomatoes are grown in a specific area called the Sarno Nocerino, which is south of Naples and by the Mount Vesuvio. And it's a specific seed cultivar of tomato that has been identified to produce the very juicy, great texture, elongated form called Ponza Marzano. So it's a particular seed, a particular territory, and the farmers of these San Marzano tomatoes in this area fought very hard, I mean, a few years ago, to have their hard work and recognized by the European community and have their name, San Marzano tomatoes, being recognized so that they only, because they use those seeds and they grow these tomatoes in this specific area, they only can grow, they can only name their tomatoes San Marzano. And they are why the area, because of, there is this very pristine river Sarno that irrigates the fields. It's the sun of the south of Naples, beautiful region, and the fertile soil. So all the combination of these factors make these tomatoes incredibly juicy, tasty, very. It's the king of the tomatoes, we say. Right. So what's wrong with if you take the name and you put in a tin a product, perhaps beautiful, also good, very good, another tomato, but is not made by those farmers with those seeds in that area? The harm is that it's a price competition. The farmers of the real San Marzano can't compete anymore. True. In fact, the farmers that currently grow San Marzano in these few fields are very old. Their children do not want to continue the tradition of this trade. I mean, they want to do something else, not being farmer. They're abandoning their fields, and we will be left without the real San Marzano tomatoes. And so it's whatever is called San Marzano and does not bestow the DOP. The DOP sign with the European Community symbol, with a number of protocol on each tin. Whomever is selling their products at San Marzano, they are not San Marzano.
Yeah, and so that's more so than just protecting these farmers' livelihood is one thing, but you're protecting the reputation of the name.
Exactly. These farmers fought so hard to get. In fact, I mean, if these fake San Marzano were in Europe, they would be deemed illegal. I mean, it is illegal to put a label San Marzano to a tin of product tomatoes that do not come from that region and from those seeds. So that's another area where we Italians could be more proactive at controlling what happens in this country, in the United States.
Right. Well, there are so many products and many that you carry, and pasta in particular. I mean, there's so many makers of pasta, and just as there are even in the United States, there are some good makers of pasta, and
absolutely
some that are not that great. I mean, you know, the flour, the type of dye used to cut the pasta, you know, so much goes into it. How do you decide what to import and what to carry?
It's always a very long process and sometimes complicated. I decide, and it's. And I do not carry many new different products. I might add one or two products every year to our catalog, because once we establish the relationship, it takes a long time for us to establish a new relationship. That's why it takes a long time, because we make so much. So we meet the farmer, we know everything, we go visit several times. So there are several procedures that we do Remember, I was an accountant when before I started 20 years ago, Gustiamo.
Well, I did not give that part of your bio that, yes, you were an accountant. So, detail.
So I'm really, exactly. I'm very particular. And but once we say, yes, this is a good match for with Gustiamo, then it's like we marry this family and and we are for the long term, so it is a long process. It's a long process, very, very complex before we acquire a new producer or a new product.
So about how many times do you make trips back to Italy, exploration trips?
Right, 4 or 5. Times a year, and we and our team also, not only me, clearly, this the very passionate team members that we have, we all travel to Italy one time or the other, and we have two colleagues of our two team members who are in Italy and help us. Searching, keeping the relationship. You know, there are so many things to do with the FDA. So we do have two team members who are permanently in it, they come here.
Specific rules and regulations that have to be cleared before you can begin to import these products?
No, not all specific. It's mainly bureaucratic procedures. Not specifically. I mean, of course, I mean, every producer that we carry and every product has to be accompanied by certain documentation that we have here in the company with regard to the controls that we have on the producer, like quality controls, mm-hmm. So there are food safety plans that are new rules that FDA put in 2 or 3 years ago. Practically, the importer is now the first responsible of, if anything bad happens to that product in the U.S. market, the first person in charge is the importer. Therefore, the FDA requires that we do a due diligence of the processes that is very well documented
right
here in our office. Other than that, it's quite simple to import. You have to pay your duties. And now we are all happy that Parmigiano no longer has the 25%, at least temporarily, yeah, for the next, I believe, 4 or 6 months duties. Nobody talks about 20% duties of the pasta that we are imposed. So there are 20% duties on pasta, though.
Yeah. So when people wonder why is this Parmesan, why is it so much more expensive than this other stuff lying on the shelf? Well, you know,
yes,
you import it, you get the finest product, and then you got to pay a duty on it, and then
yes,
so you got to cover your costs.
And the exchange rate also is is a nightmare. Now it's 1.2, so. It's not easy. So.
But when you are exploring different products and new products to carry or you know to find out the best ones, it must be just such an incredible learning experience.
It is beautiful.
Yeah,
is
I'm beautiful. Thinking of Colatura di Cetara, or some of those products that. Then that's the anchovy sauce, the very fine, almost like an ancient garum.
Yes.
But the process and the only the few towns and people who make it. I did do actually a show on on a whole show on Colatura, as a matter of fact, and which was wonderful. And
you know, they called me the Colatura Queen.
Colatura Queen.
Exactly, because anytime I have to entertain some guests, I serve spaghetti with Colatura, which practically takes no time and are delicious.
Right. And so easy, but it's so special. It tastes, the depth of flavor is just so, what they call it, the umami flavor of Italy is the Colatura.
Yes, it's a fascinating process. It takes a long time, and to me the most fascinating process, most point of this process is that when they poke the hole at the bottom of this barrel, the liquid comes without out. Clear amber, as you know, amber color, and drop by drop without a filter, meaning that the bones of the anchovies that are in the barrel macerating for two or more years, they become the natural filter of the liquid. To me, this is fascinating. So it's like, and I love it. And I love
it. It's a fascinating process. And like the balsamic vinegar, it's sold in very tiny bottles because you don't need very much to get that that flavor. And it's just to me, I find it a wonderful, fascinating process. All of the different products.
Where do you use it? Because I use everywhere.
Anytime I want a depth of flavor, just like I would use an anchovy and maybe in a base of a sauce. You know, if it's a special sauce and I haven't put it in the beginning, at the end I'll add just a couple drops of the Colatura.
Yes.
And it'll make a nice depth of flavor. All right, here's a question for you. I know I've read your comments before on what the most important, if you buy nothing else very special, there, what products should you buy, and like an essential product that would be, that will add to your cooking experience?
I would say that, I trust the philosophy of less is more. So I just think that the essential thing that you need to have in your pantry is a good tomato, a good extra virgin olive oil, a good pasta, and with the three of them, you can make a meal that it's worth of a king. And I mean, it's the best, worth of the best dining friends and
spoken
guests.
Like a true Italian.
Yeah, I really believe that.
I have to say, I agree. I agree with you. Yes.
And I believe that food has to have a price. If it does not have a price, it might not be so healthy for you or healthy for the planet. And it's an agricultural food. It's the result of an agricultural process, and it needs to be respected and have the good a good value to sustain the farmers who make it. And and my nightmare is that by abandoning all these olive oil groves, our country will be just left with, become a land like Mars. You know, without beautiful landscape and diversity, and because people can't afford to continue to grow their olive trees because they can't afford to have a good living.
That would be a sad day indeed.
Well, a very sad day. Yeah.
Well, let's hope it doesn't get to that, Beatrice.
Of course.
And you, with your company, Gustiamo, you continue to supply us with those choices. And if you can afford to buy out there, only three items. You heard it from Beatrice Ughi: olive oil, good extra virgin olive oil, pasta, and tomatoes. What more do you need in life? Huh? Well, there are a lot of other products, but those three, I think, are a pretty good triad. Thank you so much for joining me, Beatrice. It's wonderful to hear about your experiences and your real philosophy and passion behind this business. I think that speaks very clearly to the success of the business as well.
Thank you so much. Let's all talk about these issues.
Okay. And thanks for listening once again. This has been another Taste of the Past, brought to you from the Heritage Radio Network studios. Bye-bye.
A Taste of the Past is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.